Can you hear me? There you go. Now we better get started. I'd like to welcome you to the Southern Utah RAC meeting this evening. My name is David Black. I'm the chairman of the RAC. I'm from St. George. I'd like to recognize, before I introduce the rest of the RAC, we have a couple of Wildlife Board members with us. We have Steve Dalton that's with us. And we have the new chairman of the Wildlife Board, Jake Albrecht, with us as well. So we welcome them. Appreciate their attendance. We appreciate the work that they do. Maybe we could start down here on my right, and I'll have the RAC introduce themselves as we go along.
Brian Johnson, I represent the non-consumptives.
Mike Worthen, Cedar City, representing the public at large.
Rusty Aiken, Cedar City, representing agriculture.
Sean Kelly, Fillmore, representing the Forest Service.
Sam Carpenter from Kanab, I represent sportsmen.
Kevin Bunnell from Cedar City. I'm the regional supervisor and just here to help out.
Mike Staley from Deseret. I'm at large.
Harry Barber from Kanab, and I represent the BLM.
Mac Morrell, Bicknell, represent agriculture.
Thank you. We'd like to review the, well, first we need to review, make a motion to accept the minutes and the agenda. Hopefully everybody's had a chance to review that. Do we have a motion on the table for the minutes and the agenda?
I'll make a motion to accept the minutes and the agenda.
I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to accept the agenda and the minutes. All in favor? Looks like that's unanimous. I'd like to give a Wildlife Board update. The last meeting was even longer than our RAC meeting. There's quite a few people in attendance. It was pretty interesting. There's some good discussion that was there. The first item was with the mountain goats. And after a lot of discussion, there was a vote which passed 4-2 to allow the transplant of the goats on the LaSalle and also on Mount Dutton. And it's my understanding that that transplant has already taken place. Is that correct? In both areas?
No.
Or just the LaSalle?
I'll cover that in the regional update.
Okay. All right. And then the next item was with the management plan for the cougars. And again, there was quite a bit of discussion back and forth. And if I recall, the Southern RAC had a motion that went to the board to address the cougars the same way on the premium limited entry deer units as they do the sheep units. That was discussed briefly, but the main discussion was going towards just the confusion and how complicated the current management plan was. There was a motion to accept the plan for this year, which passed. However, they recommended that by next year they revise or update that plan so it's easier to understand. And if I understand that right, that's the way that happened. Maybe I'll have Kevin fill you in on some of the other motions and so forth at that time.
Everything else that was on the agenda, the fee increase and the aquatic invasive species and the military installations, that stuff all passed as it had passed this RAC. Interestingly enough, the two things on Cougar recommendations that came out of this group, one to have an update of the research and then to have a review of the management plan. The board didn't take them exactly as this advisory council had passed them, but modified those recommendations a little bit and directed the division to simplify the Cougar plan, which is a request that came out of this group, and to get an update on all the Cougar research that's been going on, and that'll probably be going to all the RACs, not just specifically to here. I would guess in December we'll get an update and kind of an overview of all that research that's been taking place for 15 plus years in some places of the state. So other than that, the GOAT plan and the Cougar recommendations took the bulk of the meeting, and then everything else went fairly quickly, wouldn't you say, Jake, after that? So, yeah. It was a long meeting. Do you want me to go ahead with the regional update, too?
Yeah, if you could.
Go ahead.
So maybe I missed this. What happened on the Cougar and the premium unit? Did that pass?
It did. Because the board had directed the division to kind of go over the whole plan, they thought to kind of just keep it simple this year, let's go with the recommendations as presented, but then directed the division to look at the overall plan. And so I think that's one of those things that'll be considered as they look at simplifying and revising the management plan. I don't know if it'll go anywhere. It only came out of this RAC, and none of the others had similar recommendations, so I don't know how much traction it'll get with the revision, but it's something that'll be on the list, I'm sure, to look at.
Sure. Was there a deadline on when they're going to do this, and is it going to come before the RAC? How's that going to work?
Yep, it'll come towards the RAC. I think the direction was to have the plan updated prior to when to July of next year. So a year from now, that'll all take place. As far as a regional update, Dave mentioned briefly the goat transplant. We did move 52 goats, mountain goats, off of the Beaver Mountain. 20 of those went to the LaSalle's and were released successfully there that night and the day after. 20 went to South Dakota. Actually, 22 went to South Dakota. We've been taking turkeys from South Dakota for the last several years, and I think our exchange rate is about 200 turkeys per goat is what it's come out to be. So we're, as far as numbers, we're coming out on the good end of that. And then we took about 10 goats up to Mount Nebo to augment a population that was started there a couple of years ago. Also, from our wildlife section, the hunts have been going really well. If I'm sure you guys are getting text messages and emails the same as I am with, there's been some exceptional animals that have been taken, both deer and elk this year, which is, I think, just a reflection of the weather that we've had. We had a fairly light winter, and animals came out of the winter with good energy reserves, and then we started getting rain just at the right time to green everything back up, and I think conditions for antler growth were really good this year, and I think that's showing in some of the animals that are being harvested. As from our law enforcement folks, they've concluded their work at the port of entry, looking at checking boats for quagga mussels, particularly coming out of Lake Mead. That was a very successful. They contacted over 6,000 people and inspected over 1,000 boats, which I would guess is probably more boats than we inspected at all of our waters combined around the state. Is that probably accurate, Nick? Really a successful program that you'll probably see us continue. Probably our best line of defense in keeping quagga mussels from spreading into other parts of the state. So that worked really well, and a lot of work from our aquatic section and our law enforcement section on that. On a similar vein, We've held a couple of checkpoints for boats coming out of Lake Powell. The second one was this last weekend. Again, that's been a really successful effort. It's an enforcement operation, but really it's focused on education at this point, trying to make sure that people that are pulling their boats out of Lake Powell and potentially headed to other places in the state know what they need to do to keep from spreading those invasive mussels to other places in the state. And then the Help Stop Poaching hotline, we've been getting some tips there, which is always appreciated. I think that's a reflection of the trust that we have with a large segment of the public, that they're willing to call and let us know when they see a violation, and our guys are very, very diligent at following up on that. With our habitat section, they must be a pretty righteous bunch because they've been praying for rain, and you can see the results driving up here today. You know, this will really help all the habitat projects that went in last year and will go in this year. We put a lot of time and huge amounts of money into our habitat restoration projects, and then we just wait and hope it rains. And the seed that went in the ground last year and this fall, we ought to see really good results from. So that's good news. From our outreach section, there's a photo contest that the division is sponsoring that will beginning here shortly. Lynn, do you want to give a few details on that quickly?
Starting October 1st, we're going to be taking entries for a statewide wildlife photography contest. In October, there's actually four themes. The theme will be fall. We'll take entries October, November, and December for the fall theme. Within the theme, there are two categories. Number one is wildlife, and the other one is wildlife recreation. So we're looking for photographs of the animals themselves. In one category, we're looking for photographs of people enjoying wildlife, hunting, fishing, watching, whatever they may be doing in the other category. Those photographs will be judged, and there are awards that are going to be, or prizes that are going to be given out. We have two sponsoring organizations and in the cooperation, well, three sponsoring organizations, Division of Wildlife Resources and two Utah photography businesses. That'll be giving prizes, and then KSL and Adam Eagle and his outdoor program will be kind of marketing it for us and showing off the winners and helping us to promote this statewide. So that starts October 1st. Next week on our website we'll have information as far as the rules go. Everybody is eligible except for division employees or their families. So you gentlemen are all eligible except for Kevin, who is definitely not. Also, there's a winter theme, and then a spring theme, and a summer theme. So there'll be four themes through the year, two winners in each theme, so eight winners, and then at the end of the year, there's a grand prize given out. So that starts October 1st.
Great. Thank you, Lynn. The other big effort coming up with our outreach section is an education and a voluntary program to promote the use of non-lead ammunition on the Zion unit. Something that we're taking pretty personal in the division. It's interesting. Arizona has been doing a voluntary non-lead program for several years, and California went a different route and made it mandatory. And the success in Arizona has far surpassed the success in California with a voluntary program. And we've patterned ours after Arizona to make it voluntary. You know, we strongly believe sportsmen are really the original conservationists, and when you give them the opportunity to step up and make a difference, they will. And the folks in Arizona have proven that again, and we have no doubt that our sportsmen here in Utah will do the same. And we are offering some incentives, some pretty good incentives. There's a brand new Honda ATV and five rifles that have been donated that will be given away for anybody that can show that they're using either using non-lead ammunition, which is the preferred route on the Zion unit for deer or elk or bighorn sheep or any hunting that's going on the Zion unit. Or people can actually pack their gut pile out if they want to use lead ammunition and then remove it, which is not something that I want to personally be involved with, but it is an option. So that's a program you'll probably see. We'll have several, I think five places set up around the mountain all through the month of October, where people can stop in and get entered for the drawing. And we, you know, I have no doubt that people will step up and we can make a difference with that program. In our aquatic section, you'll hear a lot about that tonight, but just here specific to the region, our guys did a kind of a Herculean effort over the last little bit to get Clear Creek treated with the kind of the, after the big fire here on the Beaver Mountain, and a lot of those streams were actually somewhat fishless because of the debris flows and stuff after. We've taken advantage of that and we're now clearing them completely of fish so that we can go back in and reestablish native cutthroat trout populations within Clear Creek and its tributaries. Also, I think I told you last time that we were planning on treating Paiute Reservoir this fall to reestablish the trout fishery there. The rain has kind of set us back on that. We need to get Paiute Reservoir down to a certain level before it's economical to try to treat it. We've been working closely with the county and with the water master, and we just got word that despite their best efforts, they're not going to be able to get that reservoir down to a low enough level that we can treat it this fall, and that's just because of all the inflow they've had with the rain. So we will plan on doing that next year. First opportunity we get, we'll get that reservoir treated and get it back up to what we know it can be in terms of a sport fishery. Minersville Reservoir is continuing to move forward. I think I updated you on that last time. We thought we were going to have to drain that reservoir to do some repair on the dam. Thanks to Richard and others working closely together, we've been able to set up a situation where we'll send divers down to do the work at our expense. The division's putting about $30,000 into that effort, but it will save that fishery. Otherwise, we would have had to drain Minersville and start from scratch, which would have been a real shame and a real loss. But luckily, we've been able to find a compromise there that will save that fishery. And then lastly, it's getting that time of year when fishing is really going to start picking up, especially as temperatures start getting a little bit cooler. So, you know, everybody needs to get out and take advantage of that. So any questions on any of those items? All right. Thanks, Dave.
Okay, thank you, Kevin. We do have just one action item on the agenda today. We're on item number 5. It's the fishing guidebook and rule. As we go through this, we'll have the presentation first, and it looks like we have Drew and Paul listed there as presenters. And then first, we will entertain any questions from the RAC, and then we'll entertain any questions from the public. And at that time, we would ask that they only be questions. And then if you have comments, you'd need to fill out a comment card and bring those forward. And following the questions, we'll entertain comments from the RAC, comments from the public, and then comments from the RAC. And then following which, we would move for a motion and voting. So with that in mind, we'll move to item number 5.
All right. Thanks, sir. I wanted to recognize Paul Birdsey and Roger Wilson. They're kind of my cohorts. Roger's our chief, and Richard Hepworth is the regional manager as well. I'd like to thank the public for coming. Anytime aquatics gets public, it's usually good, not like you wildlife folks. So, to start with, every year for the past several years, we've done an online survey to get a feel for how anglers would respond to our recommendations and then give the anglers an opportunity to express their opinion as to their wants and desires as far as anglers. This has been done in lieu of an informational rack, which we used to have in the spring. And we did this year. It was from May till June, basically a 30-day survey that was open to everybody. We asked 8 questions that were specific to recommendations that our regional managers brought forward. And then there was one question, the last question was just an open-ended question. You know, what do you think, what would you like to see from an angling standpoint? And then there was a question at the tail end regarding Schofield And I'll go over that question at the end of this presentation. All told, we had about 1,100, between 1,100 and 1,200 people that participated and offered their opinion as to, you know, our recommendations and then their thoughts. So I'll go through those now. Last year, we had an action item from the Wildlife Board, and it was to examine a two-day possession limit. Other states have this. Basically, you can go out fishing, bring a limit home, and then go out and possess a second limit as long as it's not from the same day. We were asked to, you know, throw that out to the public, explore it internally, and get a feel for whether that was something worth implementing here. So we did that. We asked our folks. It was we had regional managers and biologists that were opposed to it, and then we had a number of them that were supportive of it. And we also put it out to the anglers, and we developed three approaches on our survey. One was a two-day possession limit for all fish. One was a two-day possession limit for just warm and cool water fish, which are your bass, bluegill, walleye, and so on, non-trout species. And then the third option was to do nothing, just leave it as is. And we put that on the survey, and these were the results. The question that was specific to two-day possession limit for all species, it had a narrow majority, 51-52%. And then the warm water species was, you know, there were a few people interested in that. And then between 30% and 40% of the people wanted no change. Although this was a little muddy, it told us that a majority, you know, option A and B, that the public would like some change, whatever that may be. So what we did is we worked with that internally. And what we came up with using some other states and using angler groups and individual anglers as a sounding board for this, what we're recommending is that in addition to one legal daily limit of unprocessed fish, a person may possess one additional limit, provided the fish were caught during a previous day and provided they're within the legal limit of that lake. And so that's what we're recommending. There are two exceptions. Strawberry Reservoir is one. We had an organized angler group, Strawberry Anglers, that actually I went and presented this to them, and they unanimously said, no, we don't want that. They felt like it would impact the fishery, and that fishery is reliant upon leaving fish in there, and they felt that that might impact, you know, the success at Strawberry, which is one of our most popular waters. And then the Flaming Gorge was the other one. The reason for the Flaming Gorge being left is Wyoming only has a one-day possession limit. The Flaming Gorge Reservoir is shared between Wyoming and Utah, and it doesn't make any sense to have a one-day possession limit north of the border and then a two-day possession limit south of the border. So what we've agreed to do is work with Wyoming in the next couple of years. They're going through their cycle the year after next, and we'll try and get them. They've actually proposed a two-day possession limit. It was voted down. They're going to try that again in 2 years and see what they can do, and hopefully they can work with us. Underwater spearfishing. In 2012, we had spear fishermen come to the Wildlife Board and ask for some allowance of additional opportunities to spearfish in Utah. And we agreed at that time to, and this was another action item, we agreed to work with both the spear fishermen and the regular anglers and come to some consensus as to, you know, what additional opportunities there are in Utah. And because our job, one of our jobs as Division of Wildlife Biology is to, well, sport fish is to supply opportunities for everybody. And so as such, you know, the spear fishermen need some opportunities, although the other fishermen deserve opportunities as well. And there's a conflict there that we need to manage as well. So we invited them both to the table, and we met with them for several months. And the final proposal was generated by that group. I think everybody was reasonably happy, but nobody came home, you know, clearly all happy, which is probably in a group where their polar opposites and their desires isn't bad. So we'd like to thank those members, one of which is in the audience today, and they participated through this process. So we also threw this out in the online survey. how would people respond to this regulation that I'm about to show you guys? And there was overwhelming support for this in the general statewide survey. So what we did, the yellow in this slide are new reservoirs, and the white are existing. And what we did is we added some waters, which our regional managers and biologists agreed with. A lot of these are kind of unique. There's some trout waters, there's some kokanee waters, there's a grayling water on there, and then, you know, there's just some regular warm water fisheries there too. And the other thing we did is expand the season in those, well, statewide, with the exception of a protection for black bass, largemouth and smallmouth. There's actually a closure to taking largemouth and smallmouth bass from April 1st through the 4th Saturday in June in those waters in the second column. And so that was one of the main concerns that was voiced throughout this whole process in the last year, was to not allow spear fishermen to target black bass while they're spawning on the nest. And so everybody agreed with this as our recommendation that worked in that group. And then furthermore, there's two closures. We agreed to close Jordanelle and Lost Creek reservoirs for underwater spear fishing. And I'd like to remind everybody, this comes up every time, carp may be taken anywhere statewide as long as there's an open fishing season there at that lake. So keep that in mind. Another action item we were asked to, or no, this was actually mandated. We had a kind of a glitch in our laws. We had a catch and kill regulation, which we implement for illegally moved fish. And so, that's been going on for several years. The glitch was that, you know, if you wanted them to kill a fish, which is part of the regulation, they would have to take that fish home and eat it. And so in certain instances, at least in one, we have a mercury listing of a water and then have a catch and kill on one of the species. And it didn't seem wise to force someone to take a fish home to eat that may be unhealthy for them to do so. So we passed in the Utah legislature a law that says the Wildlife Board may designate in guidebook or proclamation waters that anglers are required to kill any fish caught or belonging to a specified species. Two, a person shall immediately kill a fish caught in waters identified by the Wildlife Board. And so that's what the legislation says. Our job, or one of our jobs, was to recommend what they do with them. Once you kill them, what could you do with the fish that is a part of this catch and kill law? And so we recommend these five things. A, to dispose of the fish where it's caught, so back to the water it goes. Two, you could bury it in the shoreline, out of sight with a shovel, or something else just out of sight, out of mind. Three, dispose of it at a fish cleaning station like normal anglers do. Four, at your residence. And then five, at a place where disposal is authorized by law, so a local landfill. And this was actually one that one of the several RAC members recommended that we provide some guidance as to what to do with those fish. Okay, what this is, these next couple slides are a list of fish and waters where we have catch and kill regulations in place right now. So what we're trying to do is make it legal for the Wildlife Board to assign this wasting statute. So all waters statewide, common carp, we're recommending that they may be wasted. Blue Lake, Tilapia, Deer Creek Reservoir, White Bass, Black Bullhead, Flaming Gorge, Burbot, Grantsville Reservoir, Smallmouth Bass, Lake Powell Striped Bass, Red Fleet Reservoir, Walleye, and Utah Lake, Northern Pike. Those are illegally introduced species except for common carp and striped bass. Striped bass, we have an issue there where it's management practice, or has been for years and years, to when stripers get really skinny and overpopulated because they've eaten all their food, they're not edible anymore, but you don't want to return them to the water alive. And so it's been common practice to kill them ethically and then return them to the water. And so this is just making that a legal act. Okay, furthermore, We have a real rash of illegal introductions in the Green and Colorado River systems, and they impact our native species there. And what we've done is we have implemented a catch-and-kill regulation on those waters, the Green River and Colorado Mainstem. This is just expanding that catch-and-kill regulation to the tribs in that system. So this doesn't include the reservoirs. Just from the Green River upstream to our first management water, these catch-and-kills would be in effect, and likewise the wasting would be in effect too. What this is important is, one, you know, there are several endangered fish species in those waters, and there's an inconsistency in, you know, where that catch and kill exists. In other words, if you're a rafter on the Green or Colorado River and you're camping next to Nine Mile Creek, if you're fishing in the main stem, it would be catch and kill, but if you turn slightly left or right and fish in Nine Mile Creek, you would have a statewide limit. So it's for several things. One of them, consistency. And the species would be burbot, northern pike, smallmouth bass, and walleye. This is the same thing. This is just a catch and kill. So the limit would be on those waters. No limit for channel catfish. No limit for burbot, northern pike, smallmouth bass, or walleye. And anglers may not release these fish, and they must all immediately be killed. We asked this on our statewide survey as well. We had an 80% support rate on this regulation by our normal anglers, those 1,200 people. And this just, you know, explains where those waters are that have that catch and kill, and fish may be wasted. And this is furthermore, you know, we have the Colorado, Green River, and San Juan Rivers, which are tribs to the Colorado. So same thing. Now moving to the regional specific regulations. First one, Brian Head Pond in the southern region in Iron County. This is a community fishery. Believe it or not, I didn't know there was a town named Brian Head, but there is. And they have a small pond right in town there, and they would like to treat that as a community fishery, and as such, it would have that two fish limit like the other community fisheries in the state. We've had a number of things that have slipped by, and that's all this is bookkeeping, the next two slides. We have removed the closures for watercraft and motorboat access or motorboat use, and we've relinquished that information to our state parks and just provided a blurb that, you know, please look at state parks for this information. They did not keep it updated. It became inaccurate, and there are a couple of regulations that we actually enforce in our fishing-related closures. So this is one of them. Fishing from boats and float tubes is prohibited at Aspenmere Lake, Duck Creek Springs, and Pine Valley Lake Reservoir. The next one, same thing, except for, you know, just a little different. Fishing from a boat is prohibited with a motor at Anderson Meadow Reservoir, Barney Lake, Boulder Mountain Lakes, except for White Hollow Reservoir, Pine Lake, and Lower Bounds, and then Little Reservoir. And these will go back in the proclamation in their place that they once were. Furthermore, in the southern region, Lake Powell, currently chumming is only allowed at Lake Powell and only with anchovies. But the strange thing is that the rest of the state, we have a bait allowance for a whole host of baits, you know, a sucker, you know, all kinds of different species of fish that are legal in our bait section. And you can use those as bait at Lake Powell, but you can't chum with them. And so just for consistency and simplicity, if you can both chum and use sardines at Lake Powell or anchovies at Lake Powell, if you have other bait in your possession that's legal to use in the rest of Utah, it seems common sense that you should be able to throw that in the water and chum with it as well. Northeast region, Current Creek. This is a creek that flows just past Strawberry Reservoir on Highway 40 on the north side of the Highway 40. And this creek is seeing minimal use right now, and the region would like to see if liberalizing the trout limit would increase use. And so it was a restrictive two trout limit, and they would like to increase that to the statewide four fish limit. Red Fleet Reservoir, This was the reservoir I indicated earlier had a mercury listing for walleye, and because of that, we didn't have a catch and kill on that reservoir because it didn't seem wise to force people to eat a fish which may not be healthy for them. But now that that legislation passed and we're moving forward with the wasting statute, we recommend a no limit on walleye and that catch and kill regulation. Central region, this is a community fishery. It's up out of Heber, and as such, as a community fishery, it would have that same statewide two fish limit. Central region as well, Heber Reservoir, we had a work group that we put together. Richard Hepworth took part in that year-long effort. And out of that, there was a number of other recommendations, but specific to tonight, there was a recommendation to double the northern pike limit to thin them out so that they could actually be more healthy and have more food. And at the same time, try and implement a regulation that would create a trophy situation for northern pike. And so the limit would be 20 northern pike, only one of which can be over 36 inches. And in our survey, again, 80% supported this recommendation. Northern region Lost Creek Reservoir, this has the same basic regulation as Strawberry Reservoir, Panguitch, and Schofield. And as such, anglers, you know, that we have a no fillet rule on those waters, and we would just add this reservoir, Lost Creek, to that. So anglers may not fillet trout or salmon, and you may not remove them while you're there or on your way home. You have to wait till you get home to take care of those. State Line Reservoir, this is historically was a kokanee fishery. The past several years, they disappeared. And then 2 years ago, they came back in force. And lo and behold, there's a viable kokanee fishery in State Line Reservoir. As such, we'd like to protect those spawning fish when they move up into the stream to spawn. And so there would be a closure on the take of those kokanee during the spawn. And there is over 90% support on this regulation. Willard Bay and the inlet, this is one where gizzard shad are in the reservoir as a forage for the sport fish there, and there is a really good reason why you can't have them alive, but, you know, we do have a bait allowance in the rest of the state that says that you can use bait as long as it's been, you know, preserved and as long as it is, you know, chemically treated and it's available in a sporting goods store. And gizzard shad are actually available in that state at, you know, Sportsman's Warehouse and Cabela's to be sold and can be used statewide. It doesn't make any sense why there, and then you can't use those in Willard Bay. So this is merely bookkeeping. Additions, these are just simple. We have some waters in the northern region, Raft River and Weaver River. In Weaver and Summit counties, in Yellow Creek, also in the northern region, Summit County, they have a bluehead sucker and other native species of concern, and we wanted to limit the number of bait fish species that you could take there, so what we would like to do is add them to the list where carp are the only fish species that can be taken from those waters, non-game fish, that is. Electric Lake, this is a brand-new kokanee fishery. We started stocking them last year. This year would be the first year in 3 years those fish are going to be, you know, harvestable. This is just a little get ready thing when they get ready and they do run that there's a protection of them when they spawn. So it's the same thing that I talked about earlier. Just when those kokanee run up the stream to spawn, anglers can't take them. So there was a 90% support on this as well. And this is the same regulation, just applies to the tribs up above Electric Lake. Snagging rule, we've had issues with snagging at several of our waters. Our snagging rule right now is pretty general and generic, and anglers interpret it differently than our law enforcement folks do, and we do. So what we did is we tried to make that more clear. We looked at other states. We used several anglers and angling groups for input on this, and it would read as follows. It is unlawful to intentionally snag or attempt to snag any fish. Fish hooked anywhere other than the mouth must be immediately reduced. And then furthermore, we're going to define snag, which we don't do. To snag means to hook a fish elsewhere in the mouth, and the only exception to this would be Bear Lake for Bonneville Cisco, which are legal to snag and take when you do snag them. And that's it. I just have one informational slide specific to Schofield Reservoir, which I promised earlier, so here it is. Since 2005, the Division of Wildlife has been attempting to use tiger trout to control Utah chubs at Schofield Reservoir. Bonneville cutthroat trout, the Bear Lake strain, have been added as well to further impact those chubs. Rainbow trout have been in decline there, both in abundance and their health over recent years, and haven't been returning to the creel. So in 2011, a study was undertaken in cooperation with USU to determine if biological control of chubs is possible. We're still working that data out. It looks very promising. However, in order to accomplish this, one of the things that we determined is that if we eliminate the rainbow trout stocking in Schofield, that we could replace those with the Bonneville cutthroat trout and tiger trout and further impact those chubs and possibly bring that fishery back a little bit sooner. And so we asked that, and it was overwhelmingly supported. So 90% of the respondents, surprisingly, were in favor of that change. The surprising part is that most of our anglers in Utah predominantly seek rainbow trout and prefer to catch rainbow trout, so that was really interesting. Willard Bay Inlet, this is specific to the northern region. It's become an issue. We had a historic closure of that inlet channel to protect spawning walleye. What we determined is that the fish that do go up there to spawn don't spawn successfully because of a siltation problem, that the spawning does not impact the walleye fishery, and we asked that question on a survey, an independent survey actually, that targeted the counties that predominantly fish Willard Bay, and 65% supported the opening and 35% opposed the opening. Oh, and furthermore, there's some compliance information. Our officers, they interacted with 100 or 610 contacts, had a 98% compliance rate, and only issued 15 citations. Of those 15, I believe 9 were no license. Is that right?
Pretty close.
So it sounds like it's under control there. However, you know, depending on public opinion at RACS and the Wildlife Board, we may see this change. And so those are the survey results. And so we asked several questions. Do you fish Willard Bay? Do you fish the inlet? And then of those, are you aware of the change and do you support that change? And that's it.
Thank you. Do we have any questions from the RAC? Brian?
On the snagging rule, it says that if you catch something other than in the mouth, you've got to let it go. Would that be applicable to catch and kill fish, or are those still on a different rule?
They're part of that catch and kill regulation.
So no matter how you catch it, catch and kill, you just go ahead and smack it in the head and bury it?
Yep.
Okay.
Sam?
I actually had some people send me emails on this, so I've got to have an answer for them. And this has to do with fishing from a boat with motor of any kind is prohibited on these waters that you mentioned, mainly on the Boulder. They want to know why they can't use those little 36-pound torque electric motors like they have been. What happened there?
Going back to about, I'm guessing it was around 89 or 90 is when the change was made and didn't allow that. And then about 3 years ago, that was removed from our regulations when we revamped our booklet. So it was really never taken off, or it hasn't been allowed since the late 80s, early 90s is when that was changed. And that was changed because we had a fair number of people up there using motors and other anglers complaining about the experience on the mountain. Boulder Mountain's kind of backcountry, place and didn't feel like it should be done. So we're really just putting those back into the proclamation. It's something I'd be interested in hearing from, you know, if there's some particular lakes they'd like to talk about with those motors. But it was an issue of the public complaining that it took away from their experience at the lakes with people using motors.
Okay, so this has been in play for some time then. So if they've been doing this, it really wasn't legal to start with these little small motors.
Exactly.
But the reasoning, and I can understand it with their gas motors, but the little electric are silent and...
Yeah, when it was put in place, there wasn't a lot of the little electric ones around. It was put in place, you know, there when not many people had these pontoon boats, when we're using those kind of motors. So, you know, I'm willing to rethink that and talk to some people about it and see if we need to make some changes. I was just, with this rule, was trying to put back into the proclamation what was left out for a few years, because we had people calling saying, hey, they're using motors up here, they're not supposed to, but I can't find it in your proclamation anymore, if that makes sense.
All right, thanks.
Do we have any other questions from the RAC? Okay, do we have questions from the public? And if you, so when you come up, please state your name.
My name is Ken Strong, and I have two questions. Drew, when you was talking, you talked about two limits of unprocessed fish. I'm kind of trying to figure out what the difference between, with the law the way it is right now, what's the difference between processed and unprocessed fish? They both count on your limit, am I correct, even if you've processed them?
Processed would be canned, made for dinner. That's processed. And you know, if they're in a freezer bag in your freezer, then they're part of your limit.
But if they're canned and that, they're not?
No, they are.
They are still on your limit.
Yes.
Are they?
If they're in your possession right now, you get one day's possession. What we're proposing, and this is for the people. Lynn's going to yell at me any second now to come up front.
Paul Bersey with Division of Wildlife Resources. Right now, the rule is that you may have one daily limit in possession. So that is, unlike bird hunting where you can have multiple days limits in your possession, and fishing at the moment has been this way for as long as I've been around. You get your daily limit is your possession limit. What we're suggesting with the regulation change this year is that you can have one daily limit that is fresh caught. You went out that day, enjoyed it. And if you happen to be camping at a place, then you can go out the next day, but you will have had to fillet or in some way process those fish so that they're not, you know, obviously not fresh. And then you can go out and collect a second day's limit and possess those. There are people now, have been for years, that go home, they can the fish, they bottle them, they put them in the freezer or whatever. They are, in fact, in violation of the rule right now, and they would be in violation of the rule in the future. I know personally of two cases that have been made over the past probably 5 years of flagrant violations of those rules by our law enforcement people. Honestly, I don't know what to do about that. If you go home and can the fish, if you know, bottle them, if you go home and put them in your freezer, I don't know what to say about that. This rule is more directed at those people that want to go to a distant reservoir from the Wasatch Front, for example, Starvation Reservoir, go out there, camp with their families for a couple of days. They will then have the opportunity of doing, possessing more than one day. Drew mentioned that we did this online survey. We had 1,100 responses. We also had about 650 people respond on the free form question, and we didn't bring those responses forward because most of them didn't deal with regulations. the one thing that did come out of a lot of those people were, however, is that they wanted limits increased, or they wanted the ability to keep more fish to make it worth their while to go fishing at these more distant reservoirs. That was our, this rule is our attempt to try and address that, but at the same time, not turn reservoirs into some factory ship operation where people are standing on shoreline and bottling fish as fast as they can catch them too.
Thank you.
My second question is, if I go to Strawberry from my house and I catch a limit of fish under this new rule, I go home that night, I come back the next day, I haven't eaten those first four fish, am I breaking the law if I go fishing again at Strawberry? If you have a two-day possession limit, with the exception of Strawberry, am I breaking the law then?
At Strawberry, there is just a one-day possession limit. So if you're asking me if you went back to Strawberry
the next day from my house, says you in the
trailer, that would be illegal.
Okay. All right.
Terry Reese from Utah Spearfishing Association. I have one question, and depending on the answer, I might have a second question. The first question is it appropriate to talk about an addition to the proposals that have already been put down on paper? It seems like a logical one that I'd like to bring up.
This is just the comments as I or questions, right? So
it is just a question.
So the procedure would be if you want to make a different recommendation than what they've presented, then you would do that during the comment period, not during the question period. But it's certainly appropriate to do that. That's why we're here.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Thanks.
Do we have any more questions from the audience? Okay, let's go to comments from the board. Oh, I'm sorry. Please come forward.
Danny Washburn from Monroe. I kind of have a question on reading this. I'm not exactly sure if gizzard shad are approved for one of the chumming for Lake Powell, but it sure looked to me like Lake Powell's kind of similar to Willard. They have them in there. They catch them. I was just curious, does this make it legal to chum a gizzard shad at Lake Powell?
As long as they're commercially processed,
okay,
then yes.
They're in that list.
Yeah.
Then. I didn't know what was in the list. Okay. And I don't know if this is an appropriate question or not, but at the other meetings, we did some input. I said, Fish Lake, I'm a perch fisherman. I like perch. We don't have many perch in southern Utah, and what they kind of wipe them out, seems like, and nobody sports them but me. But I, at Fish Lake, I've said for years, I talked to fisheries people many years ago, they put a limit of 50 on there, and they want to get all of them out of there they can because there's too many and they're stunted. And it just doesn't make any sense to me. I brought it up before, and they said, that sounds like a good idea. Maybe we can get the limit just taken off a perch at Fish Lake. And yet I don't see anything come of that, even though I went to two public meetings, I mentioned it, and I didn't see anything in there. And if you want to get rid of them and get people to catch more than 50, it just seems to me like it's silly to have a limit of 50 on there. And it's a special regulation on that lake anyway. Why don't we just change that to a no limit on perch and let people take all they want?
Well, I think there's a question in there.
Maybe there is. Not fine.
I'll just give you a statewide answer, and then Richard might follow up with something specific to Fish Lake. Perch are a problem in a number of waters. They compete with rainbow trout In many of our waters, we have a liberal limit. The limit is more social than anything. It gives anglers, or at least our opinion and some other states, is that it gives them a target. Otherwise, someone might stop at 20 or 30. But if there's another target that someone wants to throw out, we'd be happy to talk to them about that. And Richard, though?
Just to follow up on what Drew said really quick with the perch limit, some of the studies and things that have been done show that we get more harvest by having that target of 50 fish than we would by having no limit. That's why we've kept the 50.
I mean, we go up and catch a big ice chest full. I'm not going to sit there and count them. How many's in there? There's five of us. There's 250. Maybe there's 300. I don't want to break the law, but it just makes sense to me. I've only got one more question, and it's something that doesn't have to do with regulations. At every meeting, I've asked them, you have a stocking report on the internet where you can go and look and see what was stocked where. I said, please make that so it's either sortable or list it three different ways. Instead of just listing it by reservoir, list it by also by county and list it by species. So if I want to know where they've planted a specific fish, I could go in and sort and just go down there and look at that and don't have to go through 15 pages trying to find that fish. It seems simple. They keep telling me they'll do it, but I've asked for 3 years. And all I get is we sent the minutes to Salt Lake. I guess they're supposed to take care of it, but I don't know how to stir somebody up to get that done. It can't be that hard.
It looks like you stirred somebody up, Danny, so we appreciate your question.
I don't know when the change was made, but I can tell you right now it is, in fact, sortable by a number of those fields. I just sorted it last week when I was looking for an error that was on the stocking report by the species. There's just a little arrow at the top of the box at the column heading that if you click on that arrow, it will in fact sort by the values in that field. So there are, I don't know whether it's on every field, but I can tell you it's on several of them.
Thank you. Do we have any more questions from the audience? Okay, let's move to comments from the rack. Sam?
And that's kind of in the form of a question. But, Richard, on these electric motors, being they weren't around back in the 80s. In fact, you know, the ones that they make now for these little pontoons, these one-man pontoons, are just 10 or 15 years old that you can get them. They cost about $100, totally silent. What steps do we need to take, or what do we need to do to just get that addressed and see if we can't bring that up to date? And are they going to post these lakes up there that, so people will know ahead of time that they're not supposed to use these motors?
And no, like I said, it's been something that's pretty much known. This will help people know that better. I don't see this being a big issue, but what I will do to address the motors into the future on whether we should or shouldn't use them. Over this next winter, we're going to be working on developing a new sport fish management plan for the Boulder Mountains. As part of that process, I will make sure that the trolling motor, electric motor issue is discussed and part of that process. And if it is something that we feel like the majority of anglers are interested or it isn't going to be an issue or anything else, then we'll definitely put that as part of the plan and bring that to the rack next year. Does that work for you?
Sure, that would be fine. The lakes they have to hike into, they're not going to have those kind of things up there anyway. So it's just the ones with drive access that I think would be needing addressing.
Okay. And like I said, I'll do what we can to address that and see if we can get a good feel for if it's not a concern to the public. I'm open to it. I don't see any real negatives there.
Any more comments? Okay, we do have some comment cards. The first two are Terry Reese and Ken Strong. If you want to come up in that order, and please restate your name when you come up. Thank you.
Thank you. My name is Terry Reese. I'm with the Utah Spear Fishing Association. The
First off, it's been great working with the DWR and working on the proposals. And despite what Drew told you, Utah Spearfishing and Spearfishermen are really happy about the changes that are being proposed, and we're grateful for that opportunity to take place. The question is, we're already allowed to spearfish in bodies of water that for rough fish, carp and suckers and things like that. Where there is a catch and kill on any given species, would it be appropriate to also let us into those waters, which we're already allowed into, to also help with the catch and kill of those species? That's my question.
Do we have a...
So is that... You want to make that a recommendation for these guys to consider rather
yes.
than a question?
Yes, please.
Okay, then I think we're good.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks, Kevin.
Ken Strong, representing Sportsmen for Fish and Wildlife. First of all, I'd like to thank the RAC members, especially in the Southern RAC, where some of you have to travel so far to be here, and for the help that you do and the recommendations that you give that further the hunting and fishing in the great state of Utah. I'm familiar a little bit with the limit situation, the possession limit, because I kind of was the one that started it at the Wildlife Board meeting on November 1st last year. And what SFW would like to do is they pretty much go along with everything that Division has proposed, with the exception of three things. First of all, when it was proposed, I made the statement of a three-day possession limit, and the reason I put a three-day possession limit was because it matches what we now have on our upland game, and it just kind of made it simpler to remember three-day possession limit. And the other thing that we would like to propose is that if a fish is bottled or smoked or otherwise cooked, prepared, that it no longer counts on your limit. Now, in Idaho, you have a two-day possession limit in the field. Once you hit your home, it's no longer on your limit at all. I'm against somebody stuffing their freezer full of fish that they come home and throw them in a bag and throw them in their freezer and call it good. But on the other hand, if somebody takes time to bottle and process that fish, I really don't think that they're going to waste it, although everybody, not everybody, but some people will do it anyway. But the idea is to be able to bottle some fish, and two limits on bottled fish is not very much. Third of all, we'd like to propose that strawberry not be put on the, be also added to the two-day possession limit. Strawberry already has a lot of regulations, but the biggest thing is the public already have so many regulations that if they go to this lake, I can do this, and if they go to this lake, I have to do it this way. And if we just go with the two-day possession limit statewide, it will relieve a lot of questions that people will have, and it'll make it easier for people to understand. And I thank you for your time.
You're welcome.
I would like you guys to vote on that issue that I just talked about, if possible.
All right. And now we have Danny Washburn, and followed by Brad Bratton. You're done? So, okay. I thought there was a comment in there as well, so thank you. Brad?
Just two comments. First off, I'll start with carp. I think that's a way overutilized resource. We should have a two fish limit statewide, flies and lures only. Oh, okay, good. I just want to see who wasn't playing video poker on their iPhone. In the current proclamation, you can do about anything to carp. You can stab them, you can net them, you can spearfish them, you can shoot them with your bow. Except they have one restriction, no crossbows. I'd like to see that lifted. We're going to take carp, and I don't see a crossbow as a major impact to carp, and I don't think we're that adamant about protecting them from any other type of removal. So I'd like to make that proposal to get cross-fishing taken off the proclamation and legalized.
I think that's
I read the proclamation before I came. It said anything except crossbows. So anyway, if that can be done. Second, everybody's excited about the limits that you're proposing. One day I woke up and I was an old man. So I remembered the limits before you went to four fish. I remember the eight fish limit very vividly. And I believe if you look at the history behind the eight fish limit, or going to the four fish limit, it was at a time when Midway Hatchery came up with whirling disease, was closed down, and in a I don't know what they call it, knee-jerk reaction or management reaction, the division lowered the limit to four fish. Midway's back up in production, and correct me if I'm wrong, are their numbers close to what they were prior to whirling disease? And so I have a hard time understanding why we can't go back to our eight fish limit. It didn't seem to be an issue prior to the Midway closure. And if we're back in production and putting fish out, it would be really nice to get that eight fish limit back on. I'm going to support a daily and possession limit with eight fish. The reason for that is law enforcement. There are only two states around us, Colorado and Montana, that have a split limit on their fish. I don't know what Montana did that for, but you can't trust Colorado anyway. So, and so I look at that as enforcement. I think that when I go out fishing, whenever I meet Brant out there when I'm fishing, those fish in my cooler are going to be the ones I caught yesterday. Once you get them on ice, I don't know how you're going to tell them from a previous day's fish. It's not like grouse or deer where you can stop a guy and put your hand in the carcass and see if it's warm. They kind of all have the same temperature. So I think that eight fish limit gives you something that's worth to go out and fish for. Everybody measures their fishing experience in a fishing trip. And when you ask somebody about their fishing trip, it might be 4 hours, it might be 4 days. So I think fishermen can gear their limit to that fishing trip, as we did prior to the four fish limit. Another thing is I think it gives non-resident fishermen a motive to come and fish. Next week I'm going to be guiding for the Rocky Mountain Jamboree here. Before you went to your four fish limit, I had 3 days of guiding riders on a fishing trip, and I'd have a dozen riders on each one of those 3 days. When we dropped the limit to four, I now am down to 1 day, and I only have 5 participants on my trip. I used to have people from Georgia, Colorado, Michigan, Texas. Everybody came for Utah's trout fishing. But with that lower limit, it doesn't give them the value that they see. And I realize that's a perceived value. When they buy that license, they don't know whether they're going to catch one fish or four fish or eight fish. But the perceived value of possibly catching eight fish weighs on their mind when they buy that license. So I'd like to see those people have an opportunity to make it worth their dollar when they come to Utah to fish. So that's what I'm going to recommend, that we go back to the old eight fish limit again.
Thank you. Do we have a comment? I think that'd be fine if you want to share that information with us.
Just two quick bits of information regarding Brad's comments. First of all, in surveys since 2000, when we first did go to the four fish limit, and these are statewide angler surveys conducted every 5 years, surveying thousands of anglers from around the state, we're getting about 80% people that are wholeheartedly in support of the four fish limit. And when we've in fact proposed increasing limits, we get a pushback from the majority of the anglers that they don't want a higher limit. It's a changing world, I guess. And the second part of that too is that since 2000, we had about 400,000 anglers, licensed anglers in the state of Utah in 2000. Right now, we're pushing 500,000. Although we have the ability to produce more fish, we also have more demand on those resources. So we do have to balance out supply and demand regardless of, you know, where we used to be, where we're at now. So thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Do we have another comment, question?
Could you respond also to the spearfishing, why crossbows are not legal?
The crossbows?
Yes.
Crossbows are actually legal for disabled people who pursue carp. So we were kind of recommended by the Wildlife Board to look at that. That was the adjustment we made at that time. We felt at that time that regular anglers or regular bow anglers could use, you know, bows. So it's consistent with our disabled hunter rule.
Brian, go ahead.
Sure.
Absolutely. That's why we're here.
Sorry. I understand we have laws that are hard to enforce, but I don't. How do you enforce if someone brings four fish home and smokes them and gets four more fish and smokes them? How do you guys even enforce that law? It seems weird to have a law that's extremely hard to enforce. So maybe just a brief answer. Sorry.
Yeah, the simplest answer is we don't enforce that very often. And that's probably, you know, one of the more difficult things that we discuss every day. You know, we have enforced that several times in the state. It's just not easy. You know, it takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of people, you know, a lot of our law enforcement officers going out and watching people, you know, take fish and take them home and come back. It's been done, but it's not common. It takes a lot of abuse for our angler or for our law enforcement officers to pursue that.
Brent or Micah, would either of you like to address that from a law enforcement point of view? No, what? No, we've got to give these guys a chance to talk once in a while.
I was going to say the only time that gets enforced is if there's a complaint. You know, somebody's been in somebody's house, they said, hey, he's got a freezer full of fish, then you get a search warrant, and you have to go in that way. Otherwise, you can't just go knock on people's doors and say, can we look in your freezer, see how many fish you have. So.
Do you have a comment, Jake? Please state your name.
Jake Albrecht, Wildlife Board. Just a comment to Mike, and maybe this will help answer the crossbow. But we did do a presentation a couple, 3 months ago in Salt Lake on crossbows, and I know the division is looking at some of the things that those might be used for in the future, and I think that'll come back in November and probably be back into this rack next year on fishing if that's what they choose to do.
Thank you. Okay, do we have any more comments? Well, Brad.
I've got a question to go along with the comment.
Please come up to the mic, please. And you need to restate your name again, too, for the record. Thanks, Brad.
Okay. I'm looking at numbers here on fishing licenses. Oh, Brad Bradley. I'm looking at numbers on fishing licenses before the four fish limit and after the four fish limit. And I don't know. Let me just start at 95. The four fish limit went into effect in 2002. I'm just going to start back at 1995. And certified license holders, 514,976. 491,000 in 96, and I'm just going to round this off so it goes quicker. 463,000 in 97, 469,000 in 98, 457,000 in 99, 453,000 in 2000, and 455,000 in 2001. When the four fish limit went into effect in 2002, that dropped to 404,000. It stayed down below the, well, it bumped 4,000 once up until 2008,
when it went to 425,000, 209,000, 425,000, 2010, 438,000, 2012, 468,000, 2013, 463,000. So the numbers in that roughly 10-year prior time to the numbers since 2008 are very comparable. And I think in that 10-year prior, if we could support eight fish limit then, we're just getting back to those numbers now. If we're producing as many fish as we did back then, I'm expecting we did. I wished I could get upland game biologists and fisheries biologists together, because an upland game biologist goes, the chuckers, we got chuckers out there, they're on their own, they're roughing it, they're trying to do it, but instead of hunting from this middle of September to the end of November, we're going to give you the end of September to February. On pheasants, we haven't got that many, but we're going to give you a 30-day season. On grouse this year, we're going from middle of September to November 30th. We're going to give you clear to the end of December. Fish guys produce millions of fish, and they go, we're only going to give you this many. It'd be interesting if we could get a compromise between those two. I know it's apples and oranges, and I'm sarcastic, but I really think we have the number of fish, and I don't. It's kind of interesting, not everybody out there, it says eight fish on the license. I don't think most people meet that limit. I once had an argument with a biologist that says most people don't even catch four fish. And, of course, my response was, why do we even have a limit then? So I'd like to see that data, because I see on my rural waters, since the four fish limit went in place, I used to go to Deep Lake and see fishermen there every day of the week. Now I go to Deep Lake. We were there for 3 days during the weekend 2 weeks ago. We saw three other fishermen the whole time. Apparently it's not value enough, even with catch and release, to come down and fish those upper 12-mile lakes. And I see that decline going. I think you need to give people a reason. I mean, if you're in a Mormon state, a lot of them only leave Salt Lake on Friday and they're back Sunday for church, so they only get one day of fishing in. I really don't think you're going to hurt them with the eight fish limit. If I had to compromise, I'd say go to six fish, but make it some kind of valued increase on that daily tag. I think you're in for a law enforcement nightmare with the split limit. It looks good on paper, but I don't think it's going to be readily enforceable in the field. And I think you give the people value. And then I guess it depends on whether you want to see that number go up and sell more licenses or whether you want to hold it at its level. That's my comment.
Thank you, Brad. Anybody else? Okay. Terry.
I was just trying to recall from our last RAC meeting, we were talking about the combination licenses and increasing the price, and we talked a little bit about fishing. I thought we had some data that was presented to us that showed a relatively flat line in the number of licenses sold or fishermen. I can't remember exactly what that was, but there was a period of time and on a graph that was presented to us, and I don't know if that was 10 years or 15 years, but I thought that showed kind of a flat line. There wasn't a big increase over the last 10 or 15 years in number of fishermen. Do you remember that graph? And I'm not saying I support one way or the other. I'm just trying to recall what that graphic showed us.
I think that, you know, the numbers that Brad just presented are pretty accurate. And, you know, Drew or Paul, correct me if I'm wrong, fishing license sales have been stable.
Stable to slightly increasing.
And must have been really slow.
Yeah.
And that's over a 20-year period.
Right? Since late 90s, maybe.
Yeah. So, I mean, the numbers, Brad, it was a little bit higher in the mid. We're just getting back to the levels now that we were at in the mid-90s.
Right. We had, you know, in all things, and Brad's numbers bring up a number of points, you know, during that same time we had a fishing license increase in 2002, and generally following a fishing license price, there's a decrease in purchases. We had a drought in the 2000s that probably impact people's decision-making in fishing. You know, there's confounding things that are just, you know, in people's decision-making We had a recession that we went through. You know, we had 9/11. You know, we had several things going on in that time that probably impacted people. So it's hard to say this caused that when you have so many confounding issues.
I think the point is we've, you know, that's why this group's here. You've got some proposals and some recommendations from the public to consider whether you want to make motions to support them and move them forward. So
we will go over and summarize all these comments as well so we have those fresh. But is there any further comments from the RAC before we do that? Okay. Let me go ahead and summarize these. We only had four comment cards, but Brad, Danny, Ken, Terry, we appreciate your comments. They've all been very good comments, very appropriate. Brian, don't ever apologize for having a comment because we know you have a comment on everything, and so we want you to speak up. That's why we're here. The other thing, you have two wildlife board members here present, and they have your ear. And so this has been a great opportunity for you guys to you know, come forward and have this discussion. So let me summarize these for you. We had the spear fishermen come up. They support the changes for the most part, but they had a couple of recommendations, and one was that they recommend opening lakes with a catch-and-kill regulation to spear fishing for that species, that the catch and kill regulations apply. The Sportsmen for Fish and Wildlife, they support the guidebook changes with the exception of they would like to see a 3-day possession limit. They would like to see the bottled, smoked, or otherwise preserved fish that they should not count towards the possession limit. And they would also like to add strawberry to an increased possession limit. And then Brad came up and he talked about allowing the use of crossbows for taking carp. And also we had a good discussion on the possibility of returning back to an 8 fish limit. So do you have any questions on those comments? So I need to restate anything for you?
Yeah, I got a question. He proposed a 3-day bag or 3-day possession limit, and then for strawberry to be the same, to go to 3 or to 2 from 1. Strawberry proposed 1, or the divisions.
With strawberry to go with the other lake so that there's no question. If it's a 3-day possession limit, strawberry would go to 3. If it was a 2-day possession limit, strawberry would go to 2.
So whatever statewide.
Whatever statewide.
Okay. Thank you. Harry.
Is there a biological reason on strawberry on why we wouldn't make that the same as the others?
It's a predator management scenario, and those limits are important to the long-term survival of strawberry. It's hard to say what the impact would be. And that's why it was put on that list. The other thing is there's an organized angler group, the strawberry anglers, which when we presented including strawberry in the rest of these, they unanimously opposed it. And it didn't make any sense to bring a recommendation forward that a group that's organized to protect strawberry opposed. So I hope that helps. As far as the biological impact, that's hard to say because strawberry largely is made up of one-day anglers, but you just don't know how people are going to react to this. And so in our minds, it's probably better to be, you know, a little bit provincial in a water that you're concerned about, and you have an angler group that's concerned about it as well, and address it after you see what happens to the waters that you're really interested in, see an additional harvest and additional pressure.
Sean?
Maybe Drew can answer this for me. I was just wondering on regarding Terry Reese's proposal, whether it was discussed in committee about spear fishermen being able to pursue the catch and kill fish across those waters.
No, it wasn't. It didn't come up until a month ago, Terry, if you're still here. It came up in some emails, and by that time we'd, you know, gone too far down the road in you know, public input and working with the constituents. It wasn't, you know, with the group that's so polar opposite, you know, the regular anglers and the spear fishermen, you know, it if they recommend it, it's probably not an issue, except it wasn't vetted through that process that we had in place.
So you don't see a conflict at all with regular anglers if spear fishermen are allowed to pursue?
Oh, test.
Thought you said step closer. The group was polarized. There's very few issues that I've been involved with over the years that you have no middle ground other than the one that we eventually got to. I don't see that on the face of it that there is a concern one way or the other. With Terry's proposal, it does present some difficulties simply because it didn't go through the group, it didn't go through the online survey, that, you know, we struggled for quite a while to get to where we're at, and I don't want to then, you know, just my feeling is that I don't want to have it come back and say that we went outside of that process for this particular addition to the rule. That's the entire crux of this right now, is we did struggle to get to where we're at, and I guess I don't want to upset the apple cart, even with a proposal that seems reasonable.
Harry?
With some of these that have gone down the road maybe a ways, but it's causing a little discussion and confusion up here, that it seems to me personally, if we want to fish dead, we ought to find and use and maximize every possibility, as long as we're not injuring somebody. But because these went down the road so far, is there an opportunity to say that we could do another survey in the future, like next year, and then put this on, just make that commitment that would be part of that? And at the very least, these folks would have to wait another year, but if we made that commitment, it seems like we could clear some of this up, get it back in the survey, and let the public review that.
Absolutely. We'd appreciate a recommendation to that effect.
Okay. I'm not going to make a motion for you, but one of the things I learned at the last board meeting was it may be a little bit easier if we make a motion to accept the changes in the rule. And then if you want to talk about some of these other items, we do so with an amendment, and then we can vote on those individually, and then the board can see our feelings on that particular item, because they'll see a vote on that item and not the overall rule. So that's maybe a suggestion that might help the Wildlife Board, so they see our opinion on each of these particular items, if indeed you want to add some of those into the motion. We have anybody ready to make a motion?
Just a simple clarification. Just so I'm understanding you correctly, and just so we can do this, you're saying, because I think that the majority of us would like to accept their recommendation, and then we vote on it, we either approve it or don't approve it, and then we go in and make an amendment after that?
No.
Or you're saying amendments
that,
first?
That will be the last vote that we do.
That would be the last. Okay, I just.
And we will address each amendment first.
First, okay.
And it will either stand or it will
fall. Its own.
And then the last vote will be for the rule.
For the balance.
For the balance.
You want me to clarify again what the different proposal recommendations are, or you got them? Okay.
I'd like to make a motion to take the 3-day possession limit and not sure what to do with straw bait.
Don't you want a motion for the whole thing first?
We need a motion first, and that being the amendment.
No, okay. No, that's not. You want to do each of these individual items separately, and then pass the balance of it at the end.
But they'd be an amendment to a motion.
They can be individual motions for any of these that you want to address, and then accept the balance of what's left at the end is the cleanest way to do it. Jake, you agree?
Yeah. Okay, that's fine.
Okay, so can I make a motion to pass the three-day possession, take off the preserved possession, and the rest of the recommendations that the division has proposed to accept? Does that work?
So, Rusty, what I would recommend is just make that first part a motion. Let's just deal with that, and then we'll come back and do another motion at the end to cover the balance of anything.
Right. I would like to make the recommendation for the three-day possession limit.
And removing preserved fish from your possession limit.
Correct.
Okay.
Okay, we have a motion from Rusty to have a three-day possession limit and remove the preserved fish from the rule. And the limit. Do we have a second? We have a second from Sam. Is there any discussion on the motion, Harry?
Would this be an appropriate time to add the piece on the spear fishing, that be part of a future survey? You can do it either. You can do it.
Okay.
Just a small point. Do you want to say processed fish instead of preserved to fit the same language?
Processed fish.
Yes. No, I think you want to say preserved fish because processed by definition in the proclamation is filleted. Am I right? Whereas preserved is bottled or smoked or canned or something that's preserving them for a long period of time.
Was that your intent, Russell?
And I think that's the intent of the recommendation. Yeah.
Sam, you okay with the second? Okay. All right, we have a motion. And a second. Any further discussion? Okay. All in favor? Show by the raise of hand. Okay. Those opposed?
I'm not. Okay.
And one abstention?
So you want to oppose? Oppose, raise your hand.
Yeah, put your hands up high, opposed.
Mike Worthen, Mike Staley.
So it's four to three with one abstention.
Motion carries.
We have 4-4, I think.
No, we've got 4-3.
4-3 with one abstention. Passed.
Okay. Do we want to address any of these other items? Harry?
I'd like to make a motion that we put spear fishing into the next survey whenever that is done, and I guess I would propose that be done.
So do we?
So the proposal, so to allow spear, the take of fish that have a catch and kill regulation by spear fishermen, any place where there's a catch.
The catch and kill.
For the species that are under the catch and kill regulation.
Now, is your motion to put that in now or to just put it in the survey for the next year?
Sounded like to me that we were going to put it in the next survey because it's too far down the road. So my motion is to put that in the next survey. No, you could go either way.
It's not necessarily too far down the road. If we want to recommend that now, we have that's what, as RAC, we can do that.
I just thought it would give more time to, if you built the survey, that it would go through the way it's supposed to go through, like the previous surveys, rather than get ahead of the game where the rest of the public hasn't had a chance to see that.
Okay, that's fine. All right. We have a motion that spearfishing be put into the survey. Do we have a second? Okay, we have a second by Brian. Is there any discussion on the motion? Okay, let's vote. All in favor? It's unanimous. Okay.
So So let me just clarify for the notes and for Johnny's, my notes and Johnny's, that the motion is to put, to ask the question in the next survey relative to allow the take of fish that are under a catch and kill regulation by spear fishermen on all bodies of water where there's catch and kill regulations for the species to which it applies. Is that correct? That's the end. Okay, and that's what was just voted on and passed. Okay, thank you.
Kevin. On the 8-fish limit that has been suggested, can that be thrown in there, Harry?
I mean, you've already passed a motion for a 3-day possession limit.
Okay.
Well, that's a possession limit, so the eight fish limit is for a daily. So yeah, you could still address that if you'd like.
That's what I was going to recommend, that we make another motion and do that with the survey.
Okay, do we have, does somebody make that motion?
I'll make that motion.
Okay, Sam, will you make that a motion, please?
I make a motion that we have this same survey committee, whatever it is this is going to go through, that we take a look at this 8-fish limit being reinstated statewide.
Do we have a second on the motion, Harry? Do we have any discussion on the motion?
You're talking about a survey, right?
Yep.
Just a survey. Okay, all in favor? Looks unanimous.
Yeah, that would be 3 days. Except for this is just to put it on. This is just to ask the question on the survey. That's all they're asking to do.
Just for the survey.
Okay. Is there anything left? Well, I'll. We have the
allowing the only issue that you haven't dealt with the comments from the public was allowing the take of carp using crossbows. If anybody wants to address that,
didn't Jake say that's coming up? There's
it's probably
something
come
already
up through some
coming
discussions.
Up.
There's
some study work
We'll hold you to that, Jake.
I would make a motion that we pass the balance of the proposal.
As presented.
As presented.
Okay, do we have a second to the motion by Brian? Mac? Okay, we have a second. Any discussion on the motion? Okay, let's have a vote. All in favor? Looks like it's unanimous. So that motion, that action item is through, and that motion carries. Item number 6 is other business. There was 2 items that were brought to me just at the beginning of the meeting that we want to bring up quickly. One of them is, it looks like on the agenda for the next RAC meeting that we will be discussing the hunt tables and dates. Do you foresee that being a long agenda item, and if so, would we want to start the meeting earlier, was the comment.
It's big game. It'll have a lot of attention. It'll be longer than this meeting, for sure. It's really at the discretion of whether, how you, well, your guys' travel schedules. Can you get to Cedar City by 6 o'clock? And then allowing the public the same opportunity. It's a big region. You need to allow people time to travel after work to get there to make this process do what it's supposed to do, to gather public input. So it's in Cedar City.
I think it ought to start at 6. Yes.
That's fine. We can adjust. Any problem with the school starting an hour earlier, Lynn? No, I don't think we need a motion to do that. We can just post that on the next agenda. So would you make a note to remind me that that's what the RAC would like to do?
Okay, thank you. And then one more item that was brought to my attention that we may want to see if it's possible to make an action log item I'll probably have Mike explain it a little bit further, but it's regarding the theft of trail cameras and penalties associated with that.
I've had several people talk to me about this. There's a real problem with people stealing people's trail cameras. Of course, it's against the law, but it is a wildlife issue. And I'd like to make an action item that the penalties for this would be wildlife created. In other words, maybe lose your hunting privilege for a year or two or five, whatever. Because right now there doesn't seem to be any stem in the tide of this. It's really widespread. These cameras are quite expensive, some of them, and people are just taking them at will. So I'd like to make that an action item that we could address maybe.
Did you have a comment, Brian?
I do. I think, and I'm probably wrong because I was born wrong, but or left or right. I believe that those are actually considered abandoned property statute-wise. So when you leave a trail camera, you do it at your own peril, and I've got 10 sitting on the Southwest Desert as we speak with my name and number on it, and I've had several people just call. It's a problem. I'm not saying it's not, but I think we've got statute problems here versus wildlife problems.
Mike, I see you up there nodding your head. Do you want to come explain from a statute standpoint what we're up against?
My understanding of the law is that you can go out and you take your car out and you dump it out there on forest property, okay? After a certain time, it becomes abandoned property, okay? So if you go and you put a trail camera up and you put it up on a tree somewhere, after a certain time, it becomes abandoned property. The only time where that doesn't affect is whether or not it's on your private property, and then different rules apply. So trying to say, okay, hey, it's against the law and you can use your hunting privileges to take a trail camera is not really going to be something that is going to, A, be very unenforceable, and two, I don't think you have the ability to do that with the statutes as it has with abandoned property. Does that answer your questions?
Yeah.
Okay.
I would say that having been said, I don't think even that being said, there's nothing wrong with this, with you guys asking, you know, for the wildlife board to consider it an action item and have a more thorough analysis be done and get the information back to you. I don't think that would be inappropriate.
Do we need a motion to do that?
Yeah, I would suggest if that's what you'd like to do, that somebody make a motion to ask the wildlife board to put that on the action log so that when Dave's at the next meeting, he can make that recommendation to the board.
Okay, I'd like to make a motion that we make this an action item and put it before the board that any theft of trail cameras, or at least address the problem that we have with the theft of trail cameras, that could be have a penalty with wildlife issues, you know, losing your hunting privileges, so to speak. Okay?
Can I have a second? We have to have a...
Can we include tree stands with that as well, or blinds? The list goes on. I'll second the motion.
We have a second by Rusty. Any discussion on the motion? Do you want to make an amendment to that, Rusty?
Yeah, I would. How big a list do you want? Tree stands and blinds. Let's leave it at that.
Have we had that much trouble with blinds? So I know we have a real problem with cameras, but I haven't had anybody question the blinds and things like that.
Well, the portable ones are just coming up real popular just in the last two or three years, so it's not going to be, it'll happen.
It's a similar issue. So
it'll be a similar issue. Okay, we have an amendment, I guess. Let's vote on the amendment.
Well, do you have a second to the amendment?
Do you have a second to the amendment?
Looks like the amendment fails for lack of second.
So it looks like the amendment fails. Let's go ahead and vote on the main motion of.
So let me restate it the way I've got it. I've got a motion to look into the theft of trail cameras relative to enforcing and making penalties under the Wildlife Code. Is that?
Yes.
Is that what
exactly.
You're asking? Okay.
Okay, let's go ahead and vote. All in favor? Opposed? It's like it's unanimous. Do we have any other items that need to be brought to our attention? At this time, I call this meeting adjourned. I get to use my new gavel. We'll see you next time.